Hey, Gary.
Well, hey, Patrick, how are you doing?
Good.
What's up?
You know what, actually?
What?
I am struggling a bit with something. You know, you got a sec?
Yeah, you bet. Is this one of your deep theological questions?
Oh, no, no. I think it's a lot tougher than that.
Oh, okay. Have a seat. Let's go. What do you got?
Well, there was this thing in the paper.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right. Three-letter word for Eskimo knife.
Ulu.
Oh, like U-L-U.
Yeah, Ulu.
Yeah, that fits.
Yeah.
I should have known you speak the Eskimonese, huh?
Oh, yeah, I speak Eskimonese, you know, reggae. I got it all down, pretty much, yeah. So what's with the puzzle?
Oh, you know, I was thinking about that that Bible passage with Jesus and the sisters, you know, Marcia and Jan.
No. Yeah. I think it's the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you mean Martha and Mary.
Well, they're sisters, right?
Well, they're sisters, yeah.
They're all the same, right. So, I was thinking, you know, Mary had it all figured out. Instead of working like crazy like her sister, she took it easy. Smart.
I don't think that was the intended message for that passage.
Well, hang on a second. I mean, I might have a point here.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah. I was thinking that I, like Martha, you know, spent too much time with the nose to the old grindstone, and I was inspired by Mary's story to stop doing that, to take it easy, to get a little rest and relaxation, so... Oh. Picked up a hobby.
Oh, well, hobbies are great, yeah, as long as you do them in moderation.
Oh, I do a ton of moderation.
Okay. So you're doing the puzzle, the daily crossword puzzle. I do that. Those are cool.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I do the crossword, you know, and then the word search and the jumble and the cryptic quiz and the cryptogram and then the ladogram and the anagram and the anacrostic and then the Ken and the Sudoku.
Whoa. I think you may be overdoing the moderation just a little bit. You know, how about... Think of this, a couple less puzzles, a little bit more Bible.
No. I got the Bible down. You know what? Speaking of which, that's coincidental. Okay, four-letter word, gospel according to, now I have an L, I have a U. Not sure about the third letter, but it ends in an E.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Luke?
Luke! Right. Luke. What was I thinking?
I have no idea.
I had Lupe.
Lupe, no.
Yeah. You know what? I'm always confusing the Old and the New Testaments.
Yeah, well, that's easy to do. Well, it is clear that you have the Bible down cold.
Yep.
And this whole relaxation thing, it seems like you're doing good.
I'm doing great. I'm having a blast, and time flies when you're having fun.
Oh, that is the truest thing, man. As I get older, the years go by faster and faster and faster.
Right. That's like my tetherball theory of life, you know? I mean, every year of your life is a trip around the pole. Every time around, that rope gets shorter, and it goes faster and faster and faster till, boom, you smack your head on the pole, and that's game over.
That is great. I love that.
Yeah.
And that's really accurate, too, because I know my rope of life has gotten a lot shorter just in the last couple minutes.
Very funny. That's because you need a hobby like me.
Yeah, probably.
Well, we're talking about hobbies. Getting close here. Blank year ends in a P.
Leap. Leap.
Oh, gosh. How could I miss that? You know, I love leap years because I feel like you get so much more done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see. This looks familiar. Oh, yeah. You know you're doing yesterday's puzzle, right?
I'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did this one yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what, it's a lot tougher today.
Yeah. Well, wait till tomorrow.
Good point.
But you know what? It's nice that you found a way or you're finding a way to chill, you know, get some serenity. But, you know, if you really want to be like Mary in the Bible, you may want to, and I know that you know it backwards and forwards. I'm not saying that. You may want to read it from time to time, just as a refresher.
All right, Gary, I can do that.
Okay, that's good.
But first, let me finish, because I got
one last one. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, four-letter word. It begins with a G. Annoyed.
Gary.
No, I see what you did. That's very fine. But it doesn't fit with the words across.
No, I'll tell you what fit yesterday was the word gall.
Yeah, that'll fit today.
Yeah.
That's it. Finished. Look at that. Finally completed one of these things, and I didn't even need to use a dictionary.
Oh, that is excellent, and you got time to dig into the Word, to read about Marcia and Jan and...
Bobby, Peter, Cindy, and Greg.
All of those books are right in here, man.
Sounds great. I'll even buy the coffee.
All right, let's go.
Hey, can I borrow $10 for coffee?
Sure.
Could you teach me to speak Eskimonese?
Oh, yeah, I'll teach you Eskimoese if you teach me a little bit about the book of Lupe.
Oh, yeah, well, that's Old Testament, by the way. Don't confuse those.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe some tetherball later.
No, I think I'm had enough.
I want to welcome you to worship, whether you're worshiping with us here in West Des Moines or whether you are worshiping with us online or at Ankeny or at Johnson Grimes or Waukee. We're so glad that you're here this Labor Day weekend, and we're so glad that you got to meet, as you've met before, our good friends Gary and Patrick, which they bring great humor, don't they? Those guys, they're so funny, and yeah, you can praise God for that. But one of the things I love about them, and one of the things I love about comedy and about humor, is in that did you find yourself absolutely just feeling so bad for Gary because Patrick he just doesn't get it, he doesn't understand it. It seems like everything is right in front of him, but he can't see it. He can't focus on it. He misses the whole point. Yet it's so obvious. He's trying to think about how do I get what I want to have. I hear this message about being able to relax, to slow down, to step back, but I don't know how to do it. And so Patrick, in his best attempts, he tries to speed up in order to slow down. Which we do, don't we? We know that there's a part of us that this whole notion of building margin into our lives, having space, having the freedom to be able to experience the life that we have been given, we know, inherently, we know that that is so important. It's essential to who we are. We know, intellectually, logically, we know that we can't run 100 miles an hour 24 hours a day. But somehow, we've lost the ability to do it. And so we think about, well, I'd love to have margin. I'd love to slow down. I'd love to have time for my passions, for my relationships. I most definitely would love to have more time to focus on my faith and my relationship with God, but it seems to have become so unnatural to me. This is one of the radical leaps of faith for discipleships for regular Christians, for ordinary Christians. This series that we've been spending, this third week we are on this series, and it's been such an incredible series. It's been a great lesson for me, and I know that from talking to other people that it's been impactful as well. The first week we talked about having the passion for God and His purposes. That God has given us the opportunity to share, to take part in this movement, this truth that gives life and gives it abundantly to all who would be a part of it. And we get to do that. Talked about the importance of letting God's dreams be our dreams. Because as hard as it may seem from time to time, God has bigger dreams for us than we even could have for ourselves or for our kids or for our families. These leaps of faith that we think about discipleship, and we think that discipleship is something that's reserved for the Christian elite. But when we look at the Bible, when we look at Scripture, when we look at the story of Jesus and those who would follow Him, we see that Jesus didn't call the extraordinary, He called the ordinary to extraordinary things. And it was about what He was doing, it was about what He could do through them. And this leap of faith that we're talking about today is something that in the culture we live in today is, I believe, of all of the five that we talk about, I believe it's the hardest one. It's the most difficult one. And the leap of faith is to stop. It's the gift of slowing down. Now, we would think that this would be the easiest one. We think when we think about stopping or slowing down or to quit moving so fast, we think that it would be as natural as breathing, but it doesn't come that naturally, does it? I learned that this weekend. I'm learning that this weekend. My wife, Bridget, her grandmother passed away last Wednesday. She was 90 years old. She had an incredible life. She was a faith-filled woman. And so there's great security for Bridget, for her family, for all of us who loved her grandma, that we know for certain where she is. At the same time, losing someone, the finality of having to say goodbye is difficult. The funeral is on Tuesday. And so Bridget, on Friday, we decided last week that Bridget would take the kids and she would head north to her hometown, and just because of different things, and none of Bridget's cousins, their spouses, were coming, and so we decided that I would stay here in Des Moines. And I started to think about that, in reality, the fact that Monday is Labor Day, and Monday, there's nothing going on, and Friday they were leaving, and Friday is my day off. And so as much as I would love, truth be told, as I would love to be with my wife and my kids and her family, I also started thinking about, I'm going to have 5 days with nothing to do. I mean, absolutely nothing to do. And I literally made a list of all the things that I wasn't going to do for 5 days. I wasn't going to tell a kid to brush their teeth for 5 days. I wouldn't have to tell a kid to stay at the table for 5 days. I wasn't going to do a dish for 5 days. I wasn't going to cook a meal for 5 days. I've had hot dogs for three meals in a row. And yes, one of them is breakfast. Thank you very much. Because it's all about what's easiest and what takes the most amount of utensils to make it. And so they left at 4 o'clock, and I stood in the driveway. On Friday, it's 4 o'clock. I stood in the driveway and I waved and I shed a false tear as they were going away. And as soon as they were gone, I went into the house and I'm like, freedom, it's mine. And it lasted 10 minutes. I couldn't do it. All of a sudden, I started looking around and it was like the silence was deafening. And so all of these things that I planned not to do, I started to do them. I cleaned every dish that we had. I washed every towel in our house. You're like, oh, what a nice, I've never done that before. That's not normal. But I had to figure out, so there was nothing to do. Because what I realized about myself is I don't know how to relax. I don't. And part of it is the fact that we have kids that are ages 6 and 4.5. And we're in that phase of life where they're young enough to do stuff, but not old enough to take care of themselves. And so my wife and I don't have a lot of free time. But what I realized in the midst of that is that's not just something that I struggle with. As a culture, we're busier today than we've ever been in the history of humanity. We work longer hours. We have less free time. We have less time for the passions that we have. And we tell ourselves we have less time to plug into our faith. And that's not the way that we've been designed. It's interesting, in 1928, there was an economist, and this economist was looking at the world, was looking at the United States, and was looking at all of the technological advancements that were coming, that were on the horizon. And this economist thought about what technology was going to do for humanity. And he envisioned a future because of what technology could do, where people would have so much free time that their relationships with their loved ones and their relationship with God would flourish. But in some aspects, it's done the opposite, hasn't it? Sociologists will look at what are the things that contribute to how busy we are. I mean, it's not that work is a bad thing. It's not that schedule is a bad thing. Unless it becomes the thing. Sociologists will look, and there's four things that I've kind of come up with on what it is, and I call it the culture of more. Think on one hand, we desperately feel like we want to know more, that the goal of life is to be able to know and know and know and to gather information and to be able to have our finger on the pulse of everything that's going on around us. Get this is incredible to me. 79% of Americans have their phone on them 22 hours a day. You say, oh, Jeremy, that's impossible. You know, I sleep at least 7, so that would knock it down. Raise your hand if you've never been woken up by your phone. It's right next to you. We spend so much time talking and texting and checking into all of the news that comes across the screen every hour of every day. How many times have you left your house, realized that you forgot your phone and you need to go home for fear that you might miss something? Because if we miss something, somehow we're not going to know something that we need to know, and therefore our life is going to be less than it could be. But in fact, it decreases the margin we have in our life. Not only does it interrupt our sleep, but it interrupts our work, so we're less efficient in the jobs that we do. It interrupts the time we have with our family and our loved ones. I hate to admit it. There are times when I'm with my wife, when I'm with my kids, and I feel my phone buzzing, and I just have this need to pull it out to see what's going on. Why? I remember the first cell phone that I had. It was a couple years out of college, and my parents had said to me, I lived alone, I was single, I'm type 1 diabetic, and so they said it might be nice for you to have a phone in case you'd ever find yourself in a situation where you needed help. If you're in the car or if you're away from the phone in your apartment. And so I got I bought a cell phone as a safety net. And using it as a safety net lasted about 3 days. And then it became something that I depended on. Because we want to plug in. We want to know more. Not only do we want to know more, but we want to get more. There's this idea of what the American dream is. That everybody has the ability to do whatever they want to do, and doing what you want to do is going to give you these certain rights and these certain opportunities that are available to us. And so we spend these prime years of our life, the years where we should be plugging in relationally to the people around us. So I'd love to have time to do that, or I'd love to tap into that, but these are the years that I have to press even harder in my work, in my passions. And once those things get lined up, once I get to a place where I feel a little bit more stable or certain of how I fit into this whole thing, as soon as my bank account gets to a certain level, well, gladly, then I'll almost definitely I'll step back. But this isn't the season to do it right now. Rather than work less, rather than stop, I need to work more. But unfortunately, as too many of us know, not only does it not give us what we need, but it greatly affects the other things in our life. Not only do we want to get more, not only do we want to know more, but we also have this need to be more. We have this idea that somehow the busier you are, or I have the thought that the busier I am, the more important I am. So my identity is wrapped in how much stuff I'm involved in. When I was in high school, there was a shoe company that came out. They made basketball shoes. The company was called And One, and they had all of these t-shirts with all of these sayings on them. And one of the shirts that I had this saying on it that said, somewhere somebody is practicing, and when you meet them in head-to-head competition, they will beat you. Basically fostering the idea that if I'm not working right now, I'm losing right now. That we honor those who are on the court first and off the court last. We honor those who are in the office first and leave the office last. That we use our busyness as a badge of honor to somehow prove who we are. That if you're going to be somebody, you need to be busy. You need to prove it. It becomes a marker that we use to say, I'm enough. One of the things that, for those of you who have gone through the new member class at Hope, or who you are thinking about going through the new member class, one of the things that we don't demand of anybody who's a member at Hope, but it's something that we really suggest as a gift, is that everybody would have daily quiet time. Some space in your schedule that you can just not have to be so busy. And one of the things that I love about working here is that's not just something that's good for the members, it's something that is encouraged with staff too. Time and time again, I have had people that have told me, encourage me, people that I work with, people that I love, that say, hey, it's time for you to go home. Because this can be something that, like a lot of us, I struggle with it. Because I get all out of whack. Because I think if I'm not here, then somehow, maybe somebody's going to miss me, or I'm going to miss something. Not only do we want to be more, get more, know more, but we also sometimes, we want to avoid things more. It becomes a way that we cope with what we're dealing with. The busier I am, the less I have to think about the things that are going on in my life that really need my attention. Whenever somebody has a problem where they're using a substance as a way to escape life, what do? We out of love, we tell them, you need to stop because this is hurting you. It's not healthy for you. Then why don't we do that with busyness as well? You need to stop because you're using your busyness as a way to escape, and it's not going to help. If we need any example of somebody who used margin well, and I would tend to think that this person had the hardest job description, the most important job in the history of humanity, you look at Jesus. The beginning of Luke's gospel, Jesus comes and he says what his mission is, what he's come to the world to do. Jesus says, I have come so that the blind may see, I have come so that the lame would walk, and I have come to set the captives free, that those who are experiencing oppression would be released. There is a prophet by the name of Isaiah that said that this is what the Son of God would come to do, the one who would save them from the life that had held them in captivity. And Jesus has 3 years to do what he called out that he was going to do. It's less than 1,100 days. I mean, we see the crowds of people that follow him every single place. The crowds just swell. There are literally people that are at his feet every place that he goes. He could have worked from sunup to sundown every single day of his life. But when we look at the rhythm of Jesus' life, there's one thing that he did not forfeit. No matter how busy he was, no matter how many people needed him, he always took time to rest, to stop. In fact, there are times where Jesus would go off to a quiet place to pray, and he would have people keep watch for him to protect this time, because Jesus knew. Jesus didn't just speak in what was good for other people and not good for him. Somebody asked him one time. They said, Jesus, what's the most important law in all of the commandments, of all of the laws that we have? What's the most important one? What's number one? And Jesus said, the most important thing, if you want to just follow one, here's the one that you follow. You love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and you love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus realized that first and foremost, he needed to have a connection with his Father who is in heaven. And it was out of the overflow of that relationship that he could love himself and the world around him. That none of us can run on a cup that's empty. And Jesus modeled this throughout his entire ministry. That's what makes what's going on in this story with Mary and Martha so important for us to stop and be able to look at what's going on here. Mary and Martha are friends of Jesus. We know that because in John's gospel, John chapter 11, Mary and Martha, they have a brother by the name of Lazarus. He's sick. And so it says, the Bible tells us that they called out to Jesus and they said, "Your friend Lazarus is sick." So we know that there's an intimacy between Mary and Martha and Jesus. They know one another quite well. So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He's on the way to the place where he's going to fulfill his mission, ultimately on the cross. And Jesus goes and he stops by Mary and Martha's house. Not just because he was physically tired, because he wanted to experience communion, community with them. And when Jesus gets to Mary and Martha's house, he sees this scene that's playing out. We have Martha who is busy getting everything ready. It says Martha was the one who welcomed Jesus into her home. She's the one who's practicing that hospitality, making sure everything is where it's supposed to be. But Mary just rested. In fact, and for those of you who are page 2 type folks or who are wondering if I should go to page 2, here's a little caveat on what we're going to talk about this week. Mary rests at Jesus' feet. She's doing something that's radical in that time. Because there was a portion of the house where women weren't allowed into. And she was taking the position of a disciple, of a student of Jesus, which also excluded women. But that's for Tuesday. If you want to hear more about that, we'll see you Tuesday night. See what I did there? Isn't that great? Come to page 2. It's one of our most fun worship services during the week. The thing here is so often we hear the story about Mary and Martha and we somehow paint a picture that Mary is good and Martha is bad. Or that doing is sometimes good, but being is way better. And I think that that's taking too simplistic of an approach of what's actually going on. Because I think that there is a difference in who Martha and Mary are, to the core of who they are. There's a guy by the name of Scott McKnight, and he wrote this interesting book called A Fellowship of Difference. And he talks about how all of us perceive life, and all of us go through life, and we go through it differently than one another. There are different things that make us tick. There are different things that motivate us. And yes, most definitely, Mary and Martha have a different personality, and it's important to know that because Jesus isn't getting, because you might think to yourself, well, but I'm somebody that's more like Martha, and I like to take care of all of the details. Is Jesus saying that's wrong? No. In fact, for Bridget and I, and not just in our marriage, but for our families, for our kids, there's a book that was written by a guy by the name of Gary Chapman. Many of you have read his book. It's called The 5 Love Languages. And it's not just for romantic relationships. Helps you understand what motivates, what makes people tick, what makes people know, feel like they know and are known. And what Chapman says is that all of us give and receive love primarily in one of 5 different ways. There are people who experience love the most in giving and receiving gifts. If you have a child who draws you pictures or makes you Legos all of the time, and when you take them apart, they're crushed by it, they're a gift giver. My daughter, every day I get home from work, she has pictures drawn for my wife, for myself, for her brother Trey, and she just, and even for the dog. You know, it's like all of these things. And I wouldn't say throw away, but if you file that picture away someplace where she can't find it, she wants to know where it is. And it's amazing, the memory she has. My goodness. It's like, Daddy, where's the aerial picture I painted you where I painted blonde hair on her? And I'm like, uh-oh. I filed that away somewhere. I think the garbage man took it last week. I'm in big trouble because she's a gift giver. It's how she experiences connection. There are people who are words of affirmation. Those people who want to tell you how much you mean to them. Sometimes we hear somebody talking like that and we're saying, wow, they're fishing for a compliment. No, they just want to experience connection. That's what motivates them. Makes them feel like they're a part. There are people, there's gifts, there's words of affirmation, there's physical touch. Those are the people when you walk around your office, they're the high five people. You ever see those people? You walk by them like, hey, what's going on? You're like, whoa, you know, this person just tried to hit me. No, they just want a high five. And for me, that's awkward to me. I don't know what to do with it. Or the fist pump, I'm like, is it this way, this way? Do I explode it? I don't know. Because I'm not a physical touch person. I'm just not. They want a hug, they want a half hug, they want a partial hug, they want all that stuff. And we're like, personal space. It's connection. They want to feel like there is value in that. You have people who are quality time people. They just want to be with you with no distractions. That would be Mary, I think. Jesus didn't crack out the five love languages and teach on it. And then there are people who are acts of service. Our neighbor, his name's Jerry, he's an acts of service guy, and I love it, because one of the things he loves to do is mow yards. That's how he relaxes. And as his neighbor, best thing ever. In fact, yesterday, I was out running, and I was coming home, and I'm like, I need to ask Jerry, because I never talk about somebody in a sermon unless I ask their permission. So I'm like, I have to ask Jerry. I got home from my run. He mowed 5 yards yesterday. It's the best ever. And if I went up to Jerry and said, Jerry, don't mow my yard, first, that would just be foolish. I mean, come on. It takes a rare bird to want to mow for fun. So I'll take advantage of it. But also, he'd feel like I don't care about him. That's Martha. It's not what Martha is doing that's the problem. It's what she's trying to get from it that's gotten in the way. I would fully expect that if Jesus said, hey, we need to go and we need to go and minister to these people, if Mary said, no, Jesus, I want to stay here because I just want us to be without distractions with one another, Jesus would have a conversation with her. But Jesus sees that Martha has used her acts of service, her busyness, as a way, as a distraction that has gotten in the way of the one thing that is better. He says, Martha, my dear Martha, you're fussing far too much and you're getting yourself worked up over nothing. Martha, what you're doing is important. Nobody's going to argue that. Martha, your hospitality is well received and God has wired you that way. But Martha, you've used that in a way that it's jumbled everything else up in your life. It's taken away the margin. It's taken away the space that you have to be in relationship with the one person that can give you identity. That sometimes, no matter how we're wired, no matter what we're doing, you and I, we need to stop. All of us. No matter how good it is, what you're doing, if it becomes the thing, and you can't see anything else around it, you need to stop. When you think about God, God's not against work. In fact, the first movement of God we see in Genesis chapter 1 is God is a God of work. He creates. It says God comes into the world, the earth is formless and void, and God begins to fill that formless and void with order and creation. First day, the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day. But on the seventh day, he rested. Not because he was tired. Because he had created and he needed to be in communion with creation. That word for rested is there, and the word for rested in Hebrew, the language of the Old Testament, the word is Shabbat. Everybody say Shabbat. Shabbat is the word where we get the word Sabbath. So when Moses is given the Ten Commandments, there's a commandment that says, remember the Shabbat, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. For 6 days you can work. For 6 days are reserved to do what you've been called to do. But on the seventh day, you must rest. Not because God is an angry God, not because God is a God who is possessive or egocentric, because God is a God who created us and wants to be in relationship with us. Because that is the one thing and the one place where we can find our identity. That's the one place and the one thing that will fill us up in a way that where we can go out and to do what God has called us to. We can't run on empty. But we try to. You see, there are all these things we do to try to know, to get, to be, to avoid, but all of these things will leave us feeling void. But there is one person who is more. He's more than all of that. He's the God who created you. He's the God that loved you so much that when he saw you in a place where you couldn't help yourself, he sent his son into the world to die for you so you could experience a relationship that would be unhindered by anything else in the world. Because God so desperately wants to be in relationship so he can fill us up and give us what we need so we can run with a full tank to do what he's designed us to do. We're not meant to run on empty. We're not meant to run with no margins. That's why Jesus looks at Martha and says, Mary's discovered something that you're too busy to experience. I don't love Mary any more than I love you, Martha. But Mary is experiencing something that's better than anything else. And what she has found and who she is connecting to, well, that never can be taken from her. That's eternal. That lasts forever. I mean, how many of us thought that we're going to go to church on Sunday and somebody was going to say, you know what you need to do to follow God? You need to slow down. We sometimes make faith a pursuit of all the extra things that we can do where God says, no, it's not. No, be still. Be still. Slow down. Stop. Cease. Rest. That's why we worship. It's why one of the things we say is weekly worship is at the center of who we are as a church. Because we need to keep it holy. We need to keep places in our lives that we can reserve to come and to commune with God and to commune and to be in community with one another. Because our margins force to rub everything else out in our life and God's desperately saying, no, I want more for you. Like last week, I have bigger dreams than for you to be a doer. I want you to be in a relationship with me. Because without it, when our cups get empty, we can become so tired. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 11, he says, come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. Come to me and you'll find rest. Find rest for your souls. Find rest for your lives. In the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 12, it says, now all of us can run the race with perseverance, but we can't run without any fuel. We need to be filled up. Sometimes we try to fill other people's cups up with a cup that's empty ourselves. It's interesting. One of the things that I find great life in, and my quiet time is incredibly active. I love to go out and I love to run. It's where I experience quiet. It's where I really sense that ability to connect with God. And so an offset of that is the fact that I've done some marathons, and the thing about marathon training has always been interesting to me. You know, typically, you'll train for about 16 weeks for a marathon, and every week you add more miles, every week, more and more and more and more and more, and for 14 weeks, you're ramping your mileage up, and the last 2 weeks before your race, you want to know what you do? nothing. It's crazy. So the first marathon I was training for, I thought to myself, what do those experts know? I mean, a slow kid from Fargo, North Dakota knows far more about running a marathon than the experts who have done it countless times, so I was going to prove that theory wrong. I wasn't going to rest. I wasn't going to taper. I was going to do it like I would do my final exams in college. I was going to cram for the final. So the last 2 weeks before the race, I ran even more. How did my race go? Very good. Because I was absolutely empty. Because my rhythm had gotten all out of whack. I couldn't race unless I could rest. Run the race with perseverance. Can't run it unless you rest. Every time in life we say yes to something, and there's a whole lot of things that we will say yes to in our lives. But every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.